Amber.
Got it.
Okay, thank you. We are now going to our last cooking class of the retreat, and we're going to turn it over to Shelley Kopp.
Hi, thank you very much. Well, we're in the kitchen today, and our menu is going to be hamburger steak and some roasted potatoes. And I just want to say, I hope that you'll enjoy this. It's not overly technical or hard to do, but I just thought I'd really take you through the whole paces of what I'm doing here. One of the first things I like to do when I'm in the kitchen, especially cooking anything of significance, like a meal, and you're going to be going back and forth from the sink to wiping your hands and all that kind of thing, is I like to wear an apron. My apron happened to be a fundraiser in the state of South Carolina years ago, and it says, we're really cooking on the front of it with the NFB logo and all that. And it's got two great big pockets in the front of it. And I really like that. It's a full bibbed kind of apron. And I stuff my pockets with paper towels because I like to have things to wipe my hands on and that kind of thing. So that's kind of my gear that I dress with in the kitchen. And I learned that just because I didn't want to always be spotting up my clothes and that kind of thing. And it's a handy place to put paper towels or, you know, something you need really briefly that you're going to be using. You can stick it in those pockets. So I've got a flat top stove that we're going to be cooking on today. And as I described last time, my oven is marked so that I can tell the difference between the upper oven and a lower oven. And they both sit below the counter. So they're both below the stovetop. And I'm going to demonstrate. One of the first things I'm going to do here is turn on the oven. So, and it beeps. I want you to hear that it beeps when you turn it on. So on this panel where my numbers are, it's kind of like a window. The bottom half of that window is the bottom oven. So to the left, you've got cancel, which is capital C. Then, and this is all in Braille. The next thing is capital B, that's bake. So I'm going to push my bake button. It beeped. Now, in to the right side of the panel, and it takes up more of the whole top to bottom of the window. You've got numbers going across. So I'm going to hit 4 and 0, 0. And then now it's set at 400 degrees. So we're going to do that first so that we can get the oven heating as I'm getting the ingredients together. I hope you were able to hear those beeps. So it's good to check your appliances. Different companies make different things. I'm not real sure which company makes this. It could be Whirlpool or someone like that. But you can get things that have beeps and knobs that have notches and things like that to them so that you can tell the difference of what you're setting. So I got about the first thing we're going to put in is cutting up potatoes. I'm getting those in the oven and then we'll work on our hamburger steak. So I started, I got out a knife that I like to use. I like to use small knives. My hands are small and I'm not what you call just a professional cook or anything. I like to just enjoy the kitchen, but it's a smaller knife. So some people would prefer using a little bit bigger one. I've got a 9x9 glass Pyrex baking dish that I'm putting the potatoes into. And I've got about 4, 5, 6 potatoes, and they're smaller. They're red skin potatoes. So you don't want to peel the potatoes. You just, it's thin enough. You can just leave it on. And that's again, where your nutrition is, like we heard about the other day. So I'll cut the potato in half And then from there, I keep having it until it gets to a small size that I can just chop and make kind of bite-sized type pieces. So I'm chopping it up. I got quite a bit of it put together already. But one thing I do when I'm chopping is keeping the tip of the knife on the cutting board. And I use glass trivets in my kitchen for cutting boards. You can use wood, you can use tile. There's all different kinds of cutting boards. But keeping the tip and then doing a rocker motion where you're coming down on the top of the potato to keep cutting it. And that way your finger isn't anywhere close to where the blade is. And I keep my left hand, since I'm right-handed, kind of around the circumference of the potato so that you're keeping a guide as to where your hand is going and the size of the pieces that you're cutting. So I've got them in the pan. I've got what's called an olive oil spritzer, and it's just a little plastic, kind of like a little miniature pitcher, but it's got like a squirt pump on the front of it, like you would have for Windex or something like that. But you can turn the dial of it. I got this on actually QVC, but you can probably buy them in any kind of a where they sell kitchen items. And it, when you squirt it out, it just does about a fourth of a teaspoon. And I'll spritz the, it just makes a little light kind of spray noise. And I've washed my hands previous to starting all this. And so I just use my hands. I've spritzed the potatoes, and I'll just take my hands and kind of roll that around and cover the pieces of potato with the oil. And that's what, that's how I would mix the oil onto the potato pieces and get them all covered. And then I'm going to go back and I wash my hands very often. So I'm washing my hands to get all that oily stuff off because I like to be able to feel the next thing I'm putting on there, which is going to be spice. And the spice I'm going to use today is, I guess the company I get it from is Tastefully Simple, which I'm not meaning to make a commercial for them, but that's what I'm using. And it's called garlic pepper. And I love it. We both, my husband and I both love it. And it's just got a, it's a kind of like a jar, plastic jar-like spices come in. And on the top of it, there's two different places that open up. You just lift them up from the edge. One's for smaller pouring. And the other one is for like you could take kind of sprinkle. One is sprinkle. Or I mean a bigger opening, and the other one's a smaller opening. And I'll open the smaller side. Now, if I kind of just hold it over and use my left hand as orientation to feel what part of the pan and what I'm covering. But if you feel like this would be a better way to do it, you can also pour the spice into your palm of your hand. Just a little pile in the middle, and then you can take your two hands together. I'll do it this way. I just shook a little bit in here, and then I take my hand and kind of rub it together and just kind of sprinkle it around and kind of go the shape of the pan and just kind of rub your hands together. And that way you can tell a little bit better exactly how much you're getting on there. Of course, you can always take the whole top off of the spice and put a teaspoon in it and measure your spice that way if you'd like to. But I didn't get quite as much as I wanted. So I'm just tipping it lightly and sprinkling it. And I keep my hand there so I can also feel how much I'm getting on it. And that way, if you feel like you've tipped a little too deep, you can, you know, your hand will catch the worst of it. And that way you can save on getting way too much spice, which I have done. I have turned things upside down and the lid wasn't on as tight as it could have been, and I've dumped the whole thing. And then you've just got a real interesting project. So I've eaten a lot of mistakes. And I think that's sometimes what happens to us. We eat mistakes. So our potatoes are ready to go in the oven. And that's really all I do. I cut the potatoes into small wedges and I put them in the pan and I cover them with the olive oil. And then I put the spice on it. And that's, you could use, you know, your oregano or all different kinds of things. I just don't do a whole lot as far as that goes. So when the oven is preheated, it will beep. So we'll listen for the beep and we'll be able to hear it. It's a loud enough one we can hear. So I'm gonna wipe up a little mess that I made. That's another thing I like to do, is kind of clean up as I go. I'm not one of these cooks that likes to have a whole bunch of stuff just in a mess all over the counter and then clean the whole thing up when I'm done. I like to kind of clean it up as I go. I think it helps us to kind of keep track of stuff a little bit better. So I just had a little excess spice there. I'm wiping up as we go. So the next thing we're going to do is hamburger. So I've got a pan out, a bowl that's like a mixing bowl. I've got my hamburger sitting here with in a plastic wrap. It's just like a 1 pound package of ground beef. Take the wrapper off and I just discard the wrapper and everything right in the trash. Now if you'd want to probably take the trash out fairly reasonably, like the end of the day or something, so it doesn't smell up your trash. You can rinse off the carton in the sink, but then you might want to wash out your sink with detergent and even just a hair of Clorox or something, just to sanitize your sink. You don't want contamination to happen. I went to the trash can there to throw that away. So I've got my hamburger in here and I just literally get my hands right in it and just start messing up the, you know, just squeezing it around and kind of get it warm. I took it out of the fridge, so it's just a little bit more room temperature, but it's still pretty cold actually. And I usually buy 93% lean ground beef. Now you don't have to. You can do 80-20. You can do I think there's a kind of a 90-10 type thing too. But I like as less grease as I can have. I'm eat gluten-free and a bunch of different things. I'm watching diabetic kinds of issues, and so you don't want. And you just don't like extra grease. Grease can just be not tasty at all. And then I put, I've got an egg here, my recipe. Since I'm gluten-free, I do not use crackers or oatmeal or any kind of, I've used gluten-free crackers for breadcrumbs, but most of the time I do not. I just use an egg, which kind of holds everything together. So I pop the egg in a bowl that I had it in, and then I just stick my fingers in where the shell was cracked, and I open it up and pour the stuff in it. Now, I just kind of fold one part of the egg shell into the other, and then I'll put it back in the bowl to discard down the trash, or you can put it in the disposal. You don't ever want to put too many eggs in the disposal, eggshells at a time, but you can do one or two at a time. And if I am feeling like I might have gotten a little bit of eggshell, if you're new at it and you'd like to not, I just put it directly over the meat. But you can do it. There was our beep. You can do it into a bowl, and that way if you need to, you can feel with your hands whether there are little pieces of eggshell in it. And I have done that. That is a really good way to to test it. So I'm going to open my oven. Now, one thing I do prepare the oven before I'm going to bake in it. Usually I would have a towel hanging over the handle of the oven. One of those little ones that has a button on it, and it's just a little small short towel, but I take that all off. And I store cookie sheets usually in the oven. So I've taken all that out. So you want to be sure that your oven is prepared before you turn the heat on. Take all that out, move all your things away, set your towels up on the cupboard, on the counter, kind of away from where you're going to be working. So that I have, you know, the other day somebody mentioned they baked a watch on a cookie sheet. I baked placemats and they do not come out real good. It was a cloth placemat and somehow it was on a cookie sheet. I must have had it stored somewhere together. I don't recall, but somehow that placemat had little plastic threads in it and they melted onto the rack, and that was not a fun thing to have to clean off. So I'm opening the bottom door, and again I try and do it as upright as I can, standing upright. I'll open it and I let that heat escape so that it's not just blasting you in the face. It's plenty warm, but it's not as hot. And I'm going to put on my mitts. A lot of times I'm familiar enough with doing this, but today I'm putting on my mitts and they come up about almost to my elbows. And so I'm putting these potatoes, and on the top rack is where I'm putting them in the oven. It's about midway. The rack is about midway down inside the oven. So it's, you don't have to stoop really low to find it. A way to get used to doing that, again, as I mentioned, is putting things in and out of the oven while it's cold, and using a cookie tray and putting bowls and cups and different amounts of stuff on it. And that way it gets you used to that movement of putting things in and out of the oven. Now I'm going to use Alexa, and I'm going to set a timer for probably 35 minutes. I couldn't understand, but I may have a few recommendations. Alexa, stop. Alexa, set a timer for 35 minutes.
35 minutes. 35 minutes. 30 now.
Okay, somebody else has one set too. That's good. That's good. So there again, technology can be wonderful. Sometimes we, it can be annoying, but there are very definite good uses for the Alexa and all that stuff. So going back to our meatloaf, now we can got the egg in it. I'm going to put I don't know how to measure this, probably 2 teaspoons or thereabouts of this garlic pepper. That is one of my main spices. I just like garlic pepper, and I tend to use it for a lot of different things. I've got other spices, but I seem to get stuck on one or two, and I really like them, and that's what I use. And then I like to put ketchup in it. So I'm opening my ketchup. And I don't really have a measurement. I just squeeze it in. I would say I probably use 1/4 cup at least is what I'm doing. And I'm just squeezing it in. It's not cooperating. There, I got shaking the bottle. So it's there. Now it's coming out. Okay, so now I've got all the ingredients that I'm going to use for this hamburger mixture, and I've just got my hands in here, and I'm really just mushing it up. You could use a spatula, you could use a fork, you could use a spork that's kind of like a long-handled device that's got tines on the end of it. So it's kind of a spoon and a fork together. That's what I'm talking about. So I'm getting all this mixed up. Anybody have any questions to this point? I guess not much. All right.
Shelley, this is Judy.
Yes.
I have a question about the olive oil squirter thingy. How do you get the oil into it?
Oh, that's a good idea. I use a funnel.
Okay.
And so I would put a funnel on the top of the, take the squirter part off of the spritzer, the sprayer bottle, and I would put set it in the sink. I would put the funnel in the top of it, and I would open my olive oil bottle, the one that you get from the grocery store, and I usually buy plastic. I just found for me that works really well. And then I would pour it into that funnel, and it does, you might want to steady the, you put it in the sink or set it on a cookie sheet. You definitely want to have it someplace where it could handle a little spillage, because sometimes those things will slide around. And if you can kind of balance the bottom part of your palm of your left hand, wrap your pinky finger and your thumb around the to steady it, and then your second and top of your thumb might be more used for actually holding the spout into that bottle so that you can steady it while you're pouring the oil into the funnel, if that makes sense.
Okay. Audio now unmuted.
Okay. This is Stuart Prost. I see that there's a Judy Nelson, speaking of Judy's, okay. who is asking a question. Is you are unmuted. Go ahead, Judy.
Hi, real quick, you mentioned that your pot holders go up to your elbows. Where do you find those? Because I have been looking for long pot holders. And I can't find them.
Okay, a couple of places. Now, my arms are kind of shorter, so it probably depends. I wouldn't say, they probably come within a couple inches of my elbow. But the longer ones you can get from some places like your kitchen stores, whatever kind of kitchen, Williams-Sonoma, maybe even Walmart, but some kitchen places, there are kitchen mitts that you can get through aids and appliance places. So our Independence Market, possibly, or Independent Living Aids, Maxi Aids, places like that will have sometimes the longer pot holders. They are around commercially. You just have to kind of maybe have somebody help you keep an eye out for them.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next we have a question from Dana Arndt, and you are unmuted.
Yes. I wanted to say that one of the things that I use for instead of pot holders, or not pot holders, but mitts, I like oven gloves. And oven gloves have fingers and they have rubber on the bottom, kind of rubberish. And you can get those in cooking stores and they're long as well, but oven gloves are wonderful. The other thing I would say quickly is that I learned that it is valuable sometimes, most of the time, I do it all the time now, to mix up your eggs in either a little bowl or like a mug. And the way I learned this was we had a member that made a cake for a chapter event, and I found a hard-boiled egg yolk in my piece of cake. What? Because it hadn't been fully integrated into the egg. So I always, just to be double sure, I crack my egg into a mug. You don't have to use a big bowl. If you've got a couple of eggs, just take a mug and then mix it up and make sure that you feel and make sure that it's all integrated, because I was quite surprised to find that hard-boiled egg in my cake piece.
That's true. That's a good suggestion. And the oven gloves, thanks. Now I have, there again, we were talking about QVC and stuff. I have seen oven mitts that are longer on QVC as well. that In the Kitchen with David show that's on Wednesdays and Sundays.
Oh yeah, my fave.
Yeah, and he offers a lot of that. I have gotten some from there that are longer and that are also finger ones and have a little silicone on them. Yeah. Silicone is kind of the new stuff to use that can get hot and not burn.
And so. Shelley, this is Judy. You may want to refer to them as oven mitts rather than potholders because.
Oh, that's, I didn't mean to say potholder. Oh,
no, I'm you sorry. Didn't. No, but no. Judy did when she was asking her.
Oh.
When she was asking the question, because people, potholders are something you hold in your hand and then wrap around the.
Yeah, they're more square, flat.
Yeah, and they aren't as protective as these things.
Okay, sounds good. Now, I'm in the process of making these hamburgers. What I've done is I've mushed all this stuff together, and I've scooped up a good handful, kind of like, I'd say kind of like a little bigger than baseball size, kind of softball size, and just a round patty that's all together, but then I kind of take my hand and just kind of flatten it out. It's round and I kind of curve my fingers around the edges so that the edges kind of stay all together. You don't want your patty to be, too loosey-goosey because then it just kind of falls apart in the skillet and stuff like that. So I've got one more to make. I've been making them while we're talking. And then we're going to figure out how to turn on the oven on a flat top stove. Turn on the stove top, the burner. One of my hamburgers is a little bit smaller than the other, but that's okay. That's okay. Maybe I won't be as hungry later on as I think I am now. So, and also I kind of scoot the hamburger patties. You don't want to put them clear out to the edge of the pan where it's starting to curve up the sides. Kind of stick them on the flat part, just kind of in a, let's see, top left, top right, bottom left, bottom right, kind of in a square, kind of just above each other. But that way, if they're kind of in that flat part of the pan rather than up on the sides of it, you're going to have... it's going to get heated more evenly and that kind of, sorry, I'm washing my hands. Get them out of the food mode. So my oven burner is at the back of the stove. The far left one is the front left burner. And that's my favorite. That's what I usually use. So I've got my pan centered where I think it is. But now what I'm going to do, my burner, the outside of it, it's kind of just it's a dial that turns, but there's a knob on the front of it you can grip onto that's kind of vertical up and down. And at the top of it, there's a little notch, like a raised notch, and tactile. You can feel it. And it's kind of like would be the equivalent of having the notch on the 5 on a telephone. So if I turn my knob counterclockwise, which would be towards 11, 10, 9, it's going to go from low to more of a medium heat. If I turn it to the right at the 1 o'clock position, it actually rockers into a little notch there, and that would be high. Now, there's a couple of theories. You can turn it high and go around, and when you start hearing the sizzle of the meat, then you can turn it down. As time has gone on, I guess I would turn that knob to the left, towards 11, but just a very little tiny amount. And for mine, you have to push it in and then turn it. Just barely. And you put your hand over the burner, above the burner, and that tells you where the heat is. Why do I not feel it? Huh. Well, what's happening? Yeah, okay, it just took a second. So that gives you an idea of where it is. I put my hand above it, and then I can push my pan back over so that you don't feel that heat anymore, if that makes sense. And then I continue turning it to the left to about 9 o'clock, about 8 o'clock maybe, and leave it sitting there for a few minutes. And you should start hearing things sizzle in a couple of minutes, and that will give you an indication that it's starting to really cook good. This is the quiet stuff. This is the, like, listening to a teapot boil. It takes a couple minutes. One thing I want to talk about today too is, once we get this meat going, actually I'm turning it up a little higher. I don't want to take too awfully long in letting it get to the point I want it to, because I want to help you understand how to tell when your meat is cooked and all those kinds of things. Another idea is, how are we going to cut meat? And I know that sometimes people struggle with that in the restaurants or even at home. Something thick like a hamburger would be a really good thing to try this with, would be to stick your fork upside down, so that the tines of it are towards a plate, and kind of back it up till you feel the hamburger in front of you. Then kind of just lift it up slightly and move it onto the hamburger just a little bit. Keep it there with your left hand, if you're left-handed, but whichever hand you use your knife, keep your fork just in the edge of the hamburger, just a half inch or till you can feel some thickness there. And then lay your knife across that tines of your fork. And that will help you make a cut. Then if you leave your fork there, and you could, so you're kind of at a diagonal, northwest to southeast. So if you would then take that piece of meat and move your knife to the side of the fork, then you're going to cut the meat another direction. And by then you should have a fairly bite-sized piece of meat for your fork. That's kind of, and then you keep the next bite you want to cut, you move your fork to the edge inside the hamburger, find the edge again, move it up onto the hamburger, and stab it, and put your fork knife against the fork again, make a cut diagonal, and then you can leave your fork there and make a cut on the side. And that way you're pretty guaranteed that you're going to have sizes of bite that you can handle. Another thing you can do is
One of the things that Americans do is they think they have to cut all their meat before they begin to eat. Right. And Europeans don't do that. And they might have a better idea for us. After you cut the meat the way you just described, then eat the piece you cut. And then you don't have to be cutting the meat you already cut.
That's exactly what I do. That's exactly the reason. Because then I can feel that bigger slab all the time. You can find that bigger piece and then you can cut it. Okay, I don't know if you can hear this. Can you actually hear sizzling going on? I don't know if you can or not, but the hamburgers are sizzling really nicely. So I've got it at about 5 o'clock. I'm gonna turn it back to about kind of between 6 and 7, more 7-ish. So that sizzle kind of calms down a little bit. And one thing I didn't get out was my spatula. So I've got that now. So I'm feeling my spatula in along the side of the pan where the curve is. And I'm finding a piece of meat. The top of the meat is not hot. The top of that hamburger is not hot. The area around it will be warm, but the top of the hamburger So if you find the hamburger with your spatula, you could actually lay your spatula on the top of it and then put your hand in the center of that to steady it. I would put scoop the hamburger with the spatula and flip it over. And you flip it towards you. I did the bottom right one is the one I did. The bottom right one. And it doesn't look like I kind of let it go long enough. So you want to let it sizzle a few minutes. When that sizzle kind of starts to calm down, it's really starting to cook good. And that's when it's more safe to flip it. So I'm going to the top right one. I'm finding the edge of it. My hand is on the top of it. And I'm scooting the spatula quite a bit under it so that you've got pretty much the whole hamburger on the spatula. And then I'm flipping it. I flipped it. Again, I reached behind it to the north of the, I'll use directions, kind of to the north and east side of it, and then flipped it towards me. That way it's in the middle and it's not flipping outside the pan. That is my reason for doing it that way. So I've got two of them cooking in there. Not as stable as I would have liked, but that's okay. They'll get there. No, and I'm going in a reverse
order. How do you know they're not done?
Because it's loosey-goosey. I can feel on the top again. You don't touch it and lay your hand on it, but you learn to do it kind of quickly with your fingertips. It's a little bit crusty on the top. Browned would be the correct word, but it's a little loosey. It's also a little loose on the sides, which tells me that it could have cooked a little more on that side before I flipped it. I'm going to the top left one. And it was one of the first ones I put in, which would have been the correct, better thing to do. And I flipped that one. Now that feels solid when I flip it. I'm just touching the top of it again, lightly, kind of going around it. You can also scoot it back a little bit more towards the middle where the sizzling is going on. So now I'm doing the bottom left one. And I had to, these are a little loosier goosier than I expected. And what I mean by that is I evidently, it was just a little bit of watery in the meat mixture when I thawed it out and left, and I should have patted it with a paper towel. If it feels too damp, you could pat the top of the hamburger before you start mixing it with a paper towel, and that would soak up some of that moisture. So adding an egg to it and stuff just made it more moist. So I'm kind of moving my spatula. I can still feel the four individual hamburgers, but I'm kind of trying to tighten them up, go around the edge of it with your spatula, and that way kind of push them into the middle towards each other. I mean, each hamburger, kind of push it in towards the middle to, because I'm kind of, that's what happens. Sometimes it just doesn't turn out quite like you expected or, anyway, they're getting cooked. I can smell them. They smell good. That's another good way to know when they're cooked. I'm going to flip another one, the top left one again, because I think it's getting a little more done and it's staying in its shape a little bit better. Now, there are these things called silicone rings, and I've got a couple of them. I use them for making pancakes. You could crack an egg into it. It'll sit right in your pan. It won't burn, but it gives you a certain space to put something in. So it's about the size of a tuna fish can, but it's made of silicone. It's got a little handle, wire handle that stands up on it like an antenna on the side of it. Now you could put that in the pan and you could put your hamburger down inside there so that it would exactly form to that shape and it would be that certain size, and then let your hamburger cook and get sizzly. Then use that wire to lift out the ring, and then you've got a little more of a sure space where your hamburger is. I've used those for, like I say, pancakes, and you could make an egg. It would fit real, the shape of it would be perfect for like a English muffin or something like that. The other thing you can do to get them to stiffen up a little bit and start cooking in the center of the hamburger more would be to just put a lid over it. Let it kind of sizzle for a minute there, because that's a good idea.
Shelly, did we lose you? Can anyone hear me?
I can hear you.
I guess you did. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, she was muted.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, so what I was describing is with a fork, you can puncture the top of the hamper with a fork. And that, if you do that, you can feel in the center is what I would go for. You can feel if it's starting to get set up or a little stiffer in the middle, then that means it's getting done. If it's too soft yet, that would be a way to detect that it's not quite as cooked as you want it. I'm going to make the rounds again. And some of these hamburgers did not. I do this all the time. I've never quite had it turn out this poorly. Sorry about that, but I guess you're not seeing it, so you're going by my word. So that's good. But I'm going around and I'm flipping the hamburgers and I'm hearing them sizzle pretty good. So that tells me that there was still cooking to be done. So.
Yeah, because this, when they're done, the sizzling slows down, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it does.
That's another clue.
Yes. Yes. Now, these are actually breaking up pretty badly, which I'm kind of surprised by. I don't know what I did that's all that much different than usual. So what I'm going to do, it's going to be more like... maybe almost like meat you would make for something like spaghetti or something. I mean, it's they're not as much in individual. I'm putting a lid on it and see if that doesn't help solidify them a little bit. We'll hear the beep go off if the potatoes get done before we're finished with the hour. Other things about etiquette, you can have in a restaurant, if you're getting something like a steak and you just really have never dealt with eating a whole lot of steaks and stuff like that in a restaurant with your family or whoever you're with, you can ask them, the server, when they take your order, you can say, could you have them cut that up in the back? I've seen people do that. And now there again, that is a choice. And it's a valid one. It's a very valid one. For whatever reason, maybe your hands don't work as well from arthritis. Maybe you did that fine at one time and now it's just a little more awkward. And rather than really sitting there and struggling, you don't want to look, be pointed out. And so you can ask them to do that. They are happy to do that. Let me think. My mind just kind of skipped. Etiquette. Finding things on your plate. another thing to do is to have a piece of bread with you so that you kind of, now some people are real funny about wanting all their food on their plate to stay separate. I'm not happen to be one like that. It all goes to the same place, I figure, and I just like food. So I kind of push things to the center of my plate. And that way, with a piece of bread in that, that way you kind of can find what's left over on your plate. You can get it more accurately on your fork, things like this. So that's a good thing. I was going to mention, too, for practicing cutting, you could even take a piece of bread. You know what? And practice this method of putting the fork into the edge of the bread, like on the other side of the crust, and then cut. That's a really good thing to do at home for practice. Cutting a piece of bread. If you can cut a piece of bread, you probably can cut most pieces of meat, things like that. But does anybody have any questions about what we've talked about this week for kitchen and organizing and cooking and any of those sorts of things?
I'm not seeing any hands raised yet.
Okay.
Oh, wait, yes, I do. Okay. Let's see. Jody Mullock, I'm going to ask you to unmute.
Alert exclaim. Audio now unmuted.
Can you hear me?
Zoom.
Yes.
Okay. I just love your oven and your stove and stuff. But mine is just so dang old. How do you know when, like, I don't, you know, I'm not used to using the oven or the stove because it's a, you know, electric. I hate that without the burners on, you know, on the top. But I was wondering, how do you know when you're, like, for me, mine doesn't beep or anything like yours does. So how do you know when it's preheated, your oven? How long do I have to wait? Before
I would say about, if you waited 10 minutes,
I'd say
five to 7 minutes, somewhere in there, maybe.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if an older oven is faster or slower than the more modern ones. Seems to me that for sure, if you waited 15 minutes, it would be done. But the other thing to remember, unless you're baking a cake, it probably doesn't matter if it's preheated all the way.
Good.
You can, you know, depends on what you're making. They say it matters with a cake. If you have any doubt, add a minute or two to your cooking time.
Oh, I see.
That's what I would say.
Great.
That's a good idea. Yes.
Any other questions?
Whoever that is, I hope they're okay.
I do too. They may want to mute themselves and be more.
Hand raised.
Okay, we have a hand from Ursula, I think it is.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you again to unmute. I apologize. There we go.
Dolly, I have a question. I have a cook's top stove like you do. Uh-huh. I'm always worried that I don't know how soon the burners cool off because I have burnt myself. So when you're done cooking, is there any way to, is there a time limit of how fast they cool off or not? Or do you do anything to make sure you don't touch it after you take the pot off the stove?
I just kind of stay away from it, I guess. But you can get these things called burner covers that are metal. And they do have, I think if it's really hot, you'd have to let it cool off for, you know, at least 15, 20 minutes and then put it on. But if it's a little bit warm, there's these metal burner covers that are decorative and you can put them over those so that that would cover that what's remaining of the heat. But I think at first I just kind of stay clear of it. And so like if I've had it on high boiling water for potatoes or something, and I pull it off, I'll put the pan to the back of the stove or to the side and get it off the burner. I'll turn the burner off first, then I'll pull the pan off. And then I'll just, you can feel when that heat has, if you stick your hand above it, you can definitely feel when it's calmed down, when the heat has calmed down. But the other thing of it is there are silicone burner covers, but I have mistakenly done that and burned them up. So you definitely want to not put anything on it for a while, just till it gets the real intense heat gone.
If you put your hand above it a little bit, knowing that it may be hot, and then just if you don't feel heat coming from it, just gingerly touch it.
Kind of crawl your finger from the cool side towards the warm side, and just
be prepared to move your finger fast.
Yeah.
See, what I want? I want a beeper that will beep when it's cool enough.
You'll have to invent it, I think. You know, does anybody know, did you know that you can get burners that plug into the wall? It's just a burner. And who makes the burner that we have, Susan? They're convection. I mean, Ninja makes them, and the only place that gets hot is underneath the pan, and you have to you can't use all kinds of pans, it has to be magnetic based, but a lot of pans are these days. So when you turn your burner on, it'll only start when you put the pan on it, and the only part that gets hot is under the pan.
Oh, that's a great idea. And what's that called?
I think
Ninja makes it.
Well, Ninja's one of the brands, but there's something Wave. It's a convection burner.
I like that idea. That might be handy for when I'm just doing one item or so.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Let me tell you a little bit of progress on my hamburger. I've had a lid on it while we've been talking. I had it, the heat turned down to about where it would be like about 11 o'clock, just so it's barely on your burner on the cooler side. Mm-hmm. And the hamburgers have quit sizzling. They are a little bit, but not to the degree they were. And the tops of them, when I feel them, they're warm, but if you just touch them lightly, it's not going to burn you. They're solid. You can feel that it's very much more solid. And if I put a fork into it, the meat is very much more good. So that's the
success. And now potatoes are done.
Timer's going off for my potatoes.
Okay. We have two more questions. If you want to take them whenever you're ready.
Go ahead.
Okay. Vincent, you're unmuted, and then Nancy Yeager, you'll be next.
Yeah, just a couple of comments there about the first one about knives. I try to keep my knives sharp. I use a whetstone to make sure that they're very, very sharp. And I always use a wooden board, never a hard board, because I would dull the knives. And I find it easier, and it prevents me from pushing too hard, which sometimes I could get hurt, you know, much more easily if I use a knife that is dull than if I use a sharp knife.
Okay.
And the other one about water, maybe sprinkling water on the burners. You know, if it sizzles, it's hot.
Oh, there you go. That's a good one.
Yeah. Nancy.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Maybe because I'm paranoid. I have the flat cooktops too. And so first of all, I wouldn't touch the burner for at least 15 minutes. But I also, when I take whatever needs to come off of it, I'll take up some kind of pot and put cold water in it, or maybe even ice with cold water. And then I'll put that on the burner, and that helps to cool it faster.
Oh, that is excellent. That is excellent.
I burnt myself once, which is why.
Yeah.
I noted it.
I want to tell you too, our potatoes have come out of the oven. I got them out and they are very tender. So I cooked them about 35 minutes and that seemed to work pretty well.
Wow, you timed that very well.
Yeah, I kind of did, didn't I? That's unusual. So I like the idea of the water. You know, somebody gave me a tip too, that when you're, I put ice on boiled eggs after I boil them and drain them in the, and leave them in the colander. I'll put ice on them and it cools them down really well and stuff. So I like the ice on the, in the pan of water. That'll cool off your burner. That would be good. Yeah.
Okay, the next one, we have one more question, is from Judy Nelson, and I'm asking you to unmute, and that's going to be star six for you.
Yeah, I have a question to pose to the group. I used to like to bake a lot, and one problem I'm having, like with cookies, if it's a recipe that says spread the dough evenly in a 9 by 13 inch pan, I have trouble spreading it evenly. So when it comes out of the oven, some are too done, some aren't too done. Any ideas about that?
Are you using your hands when you spread the dough or separate it in between?
Yes.
Okay. Another thing I do is get my fingers a little bit wet and moist. I bake a lot of banana bread, so when I'm putting it in a pan, whether it's a loaf pan or a cake pan, or I mean square 9 by 13 or something, and get my hands a little bit wet, and that helps you to spread it and keep, so that the dough isn't all over sticky all over your hands and you're actually taking some out as you're feeling it. I just wet them a little bit, and that way it kind of moistens the batter as well, and I've had good luck with that, doing that. And just turn the pan around several times. Turn the pan around and just, you kind of can, if you turn it around several times as you're doing that, you can feel a little more where it's high and low and those sorts of things.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think we're about to end this. And I want to thank you, Shelley, and thank everybody this week who helped in the kitchen or in the cleaning the house, all the things that we did, we'll reminisce tomorrow about. But
I just want to add that if anybody wants to contact me after this and talk separately, that is totally fine. So, yeah.
Okay. So we can end this recording, I think, if we could do that.